When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, let me talk to you about rotoballer.com. I do a lot of my written content over there, season-long baseball, DFS for NFL and MLB. And yes, NFL's in the books. Congratulations, Los Angeles Rams. But we are ready for the MLB baseball season. Sure, it's locked out. We're getting baseball, folks. Believe it. Just believe it. We're getting baseball, and we're going to have you ready at rotoballer.com to win your fantasy leagues. And it all starts with the draft. We got a draft guide over there for premium members at rotoballer.com. I got a couple articles. We got some special articles from people I can't talk about yet that are going to be in there. We also got Eric Samolsky. We got Ariel Cohen. We got Nick Mariano. We got the king himself, Scotty Engel. Many, many more over there at rotoballer.com. Become a premium member. Use promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A. Get you 10% off the premium package of your choice. And that counts for season-long baseball and DFS. I told you I got DFS content over there. You got the optimizers. You got so many cool articles over there. And it got you all locked up for the entire baseball season. So win big with rotoballer.com. Use promo code Bubba for 10% off the premium package of your choice and start winning like a boss. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 439. Special guest joining me today, rejoining me for another time on this wonderful endeavor. He was my first ever guest on Benched with Bubba way back in the day. He's been back a few other times since then, of course. But he's a good friend of mine, good friend of the fantasy community. He's a even though he's a Dodgers fan, we get along just fine. You can find him on Twitter at Brock Ness Monster and his fantasy work over at FTN Fantasy. Brock Miller, how we doing, my friend?
Hey, what's up, Bubs? Happy to be back on here. Yep. Talking baseball with my homies. One of my favorite things to do, you know, for sure. And then, you know, especially you're looking to talk some Dodgers. So, you know, hopefully something that I could share a little bit of extra insight on. So,
yeah, most definitely. I know you can for sure. That's why the outline was easy for me. And it's funny, we have like a couple listener questions and it's all on the outline already. We got you covered. It was already there. But, before we get going, I know you got some things changing in your life, but kind of let people know what you've been up to at FTN Fantasy. You've got some great content coming out there. The draft guide has been great, and you've been a part of that.
Yeah, we put out that draft guide in late December. You know, I put forth an article just on DCs, kind of a I want to say I kind of tried to zoom out a little bit. I wanted to try to hit all the topics. There was not a whole lot of nuts and bolts in there, but I think I summarized up DCs pretty good there and had just enough on strategy and left a couple of the pieces a little bit open-ended there. And then over the last several weeks, I've been coming out with articles on FTN, kind of covering, you know, I talked in the draft guide a little bit about that strategy for drafting in DCs late. And then so all these articles over the last few weeks have kind of been that, you know, I started out, I think I covered corner infielders first, corner infielders after draft pick 450, you know, so after the 30th round and on, you know, kind of really getting into, you know, the deeper part of the drafts. That's the part of the drafts that don't come up in OCs and stuff like that. And so kind of going after those late round targets. And so I moved from there, middle infielders, catchers, outfielders, and then pitchers, and then the most interesting one, relief pitchers, you know, taking some darts on some saves in the late rounds there. So that's kind of what I've been working on at FTN. But I mean, I'm sure everybody's noticed FTN all over Twitter. You know, the team's been hard at work. Matty Wood, Vlad, Matt Kupferle. We've had a couple guest pieces on there, and the draft guide had some awesome guest pieces on there. I'm guessing by this point, pretty much everybody's taking a look at the draft guide by now. But yeah, that's kind of where we are.
Yeah, it's awesome stuff. I've talked about it. I know I've had some other people on the show that have talked about it as well. And like that Jimmy Butler article was an eye opener on how to analyze and draft. Like, it's just genius stuff. So many smart people out there. So I highly recommend everybody check out FTN for the great work, great people. Support the friends and get better at fantasy baseball at the same time. But one thing you mentioned there, we're going to kind of talk early season drafting, what we've seen here and there. But you mentioned you wrote that also fun piece on the bullpens, on closers. And we know it's well documented and talked about how the closer runs have been crazy in DCs. And there's like one argument, well, there's no fab, so you got to get your saves. That's just the way it goes. So you got to pay the piper, but some guys don't believe in paying the piper, and you got to get the late guys, like you mentioned. What are you doing with closers? Like, what are you taking away from this early draft that stands out to you when you're drafting closers?
Yeah, so a big thing with me, I mean, that was definitely something that has kind of surprised me as the draft season's kind of come on. I figured as less pitchers are going to be going out there and getting saves when the bullpens are, you know, getting a little bit more spread out, playing more matchups and stuff like that, you know, you're still going to need saves. You're still going to need that stat in roto leagues. And, you know, I figured it was going to push closers up some, but, you know, the degree that we're seeing here, you know, second round for those top two guys there, you know, third round for Raisel Iglesias. I don't know that I can do it. It's definitely been the most surprising thing I've seen so far this draft season. But, you know, for me, feeling good about locking in, you know, 35 saves early on. I mean, it's only one category. You know, this would be like drafting Miles Straw in the third round. I mean, it's not exactly the same. You know, you draft Miles Straw in the first round, like he's only going to hit four home runs. Yeah. That's going to hurt. It's not like Liam Hendricks is only going to like strike out 10 guys. But I mean, the difference between Liam Hendricks and then, you know, drafting somebody that you feel good about that's available at like pick 150, you know, that guy's going to strike out 65 instead of like 85 guys. But otherwise, you know, 30 saves versus 35 saves, I don't know that I can really pay, you know, on those top two guys there. So, I mean, it was kind of interesting to me, you know, there's a lot of guys that were available a little bit later in drafts last year. And these aren't guys that went out and got 30 saves. You didn't, you know, magically stumble upon a Kenley Jansen in the 35th round or anything like that. But you're definitely able to find guys that went out there and got 9 saves over the course of a month and a half or whatever, you know, and if you can grab a couple of those guys late to kind of plug in the end of your save stats, I think that's the way to go. So, I mean, I'm definitely trying to lock in one guy. You know, that was the thing reviewing top 10 teams in DCs from last year. Most of those teams did lock in one top guy. You know, they had somebody that went out there. That was a bell cow. That was 30, 34 saves or whatever. If you were lucky enough and got 38 saves out of Mark Melanson, that was great. It was kind of that. And then there was like a lesser save, a lesser closer, somebody that maybe, you know, 20, 22 saves. You know, I had a lot why can't I think of his damn name? Reed up in San Francisco.
McGee.
Or Jake McGee. Jake McGee. I had a lot of Jake McGee last year. I just kind of took a look at that bullpen, and he looked like, you know, the way that he pitched for the Dodgers the year before, he looked like the best arm in that bullpen and kind of went for him. And that paid off really well. 29 saves. He was available late. I don't think you're going to be able to get that same kind of guy. You're not going to get 30 saves that late or anything like that. But I think that's the way to go. You know, take a bell cow early, maybe not second round, but early. And then after that, maybe get a 20 saves guy, and then just have a handful of guys, you know, towards the end that, you know, are going to spend 6 weeks as a closer at some point. I think that's doable.
Yeah, it's kind of, I'd say it's pretty much where I've been. I try to get one of the big guys if I can, like I'm not in love with Clase, but I get it. Like Iglesias is the guy I love, but he's going so early now. It's like I want one of the top, you know, a six-ish, give or take, maybe seven guys where I – because that's the reason why they're getting pushed up is there's like the guy that's locked into a role. There's only so many right now. Yeah. And sure, it's February, and we'd expect to have a little more clarity on things, but that's not the world we live in lockout land. So it's like that's why like one of the questions I have later is about ADP is not changing, so it's weird kind of doing these same types of drafts and doing it, and that's why the closer situation's going that way. Just per se, if you're taking one guy early, I'm kind of in the same boat with you. How many specs are you taking later on? Because that's one of the interesting conversations I don't think gets talked about enough is some people take like, you know, five, six specs. Some take a lot of specs and kind of eat up their roster spots. Do you, and there's probably no rhyme or reason. It just depends on the draft. But do you have kind of an idea of how many you like to kind of leave the draft with?
Yeah, for in the DCs, I pretty much, you know, like I say, one bell cow, one guy that I feel good about, which so far has been a whole lot of Lucas Sims. I really like Lucas Sims. So he's kind of like my middle guy. And then after that, I mean, I'm looking at like four or five if I happen to do a draft, you know, and I'm doing a few DCs, so I want to cast a little bit of a wider net. So I do have a couple where I did go and, you know, get two closers. I have a couple where like Lucas Sims was my first closer. So it just kind of depends. So like that draft where Lucas Sims was my first closer, you know, then we're talking like six guys late, you know, like my 49th pick, you know, was Guerra, the guy for Oakland that nobody thinks is going to
get any
saves. Because he's 32. He's like, it's not actually like great. I can't remember. Guerra.
Yeah.
DeLois Guerra, 32 years old. He's up there in Oakland. I think at some point, you know, Trevino gets traded. You know, and there you go. If you get eight saves with your 49th pick right there, you love it. That's great value. So I mean, it just kind of depends, but in most drafts I would say I'm probably going to have four spec guys. And you know, for what it's worth, I've kind of noticed some of these top guys that are doing these drafts, a lot of those big guys, man, they're just taking like two big closers, and then after that, like almost nothing, like maybe a, you know, one guy here or there or whatever. But it is worth noting, last year continued 80th percentile for saves, continued to decline. I think it was down to 67. But an interesting note that I saw, amongst top 25 teams in draft champion leagues last year, there was an average of 64 saves, where 80th percentile was 67. So, I mean, it's like, you know, I always think of like these top rosters as being like, you know, yeah, sure, the guy probably was aiming for 80th percentile, but you know, a lot of things went right for him and they ended up with 75 saves and, you know, he ended up, you know, second percentile in saves and a ton of points for saves. I mean, the second best DC roster from all of last year only had 44 saves.
Yeah.
I mean, he was probably like eighth in his league in saves. You know what I mean? Like,
so he kicked butt everywhere else. And that's one thing I've tried talking about a few times is when I had Zach Waxman on my show a while back is, we had a listener question that said, hey, if I just want to win my league, not the overall, I just want to win my league. And that's when you can kind of punt a category. If you just want to win your league, you can do that. And that's where if you want to punt saves and go, screw it, I just want to win that, you know, the league, that's fine. So Zach broke it down on if you want to just basically get like a zero in saves, what do you need to finish like 85th percentile everywhere else? Not that big of a gap. And so if you crush those other spots, like you're saying, instead of take a Hendricks in round two or three and another guy in round four or five, make those like stud hitters or something, that replacement value can be quite interesting. So it's just, I like talking about it. I know people probably get sick of it because it's been like a big conversation on a lot of shows, but I think it's an interesting angle to get different people's vantage point on it. Just kind of open the mind of people that you don't have to, just because everybody's doing it doesn't mean you have to do it type thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of like that idea. I mean, it's occurred to me a couple times over the last few weeks and like, it's too late. I'm not going to do it. I've been kind of taking some shots down the field. I'm going to try and win an overall, but it made some sense to me. Like, you know, take your bankroll and just hit all those leagues hard and do that. Punt saves, just punt saves. And if you can cash in like half of them by punting saves, like forget about your overall, and just try to win the league. And if you do enough volume, I mean, that's kind of hell to be swapping guys in and out for all night on Sunday night. That kind of sucks. But I mean, legit, like, you know, Seems like a decent path to go out there and cash in half of those leagues. I mean, you can make a really good return on an investment that way, you know, and then when your bankroll is doubled next year, then maybe next year go for an overall. I don't know.
And even if you just punt like the early guys, but go and get like six or seven potential dudes late, like in rounds 40 on, just use those picks there. And if any of those hit, you still have a chance at the overall. So it's an interesting concept if you really like plan ahead.
DraftKings, you know, in investment, the stock market, like all these different things, like we've seen this lesson play out like enough. When the herd is zigging, you know, you got to try and think of a way to zag. And sometimes even if you don't zag like the absolute perfect way, just trying to, like, it might work out in the end.
Definitely. Most definitely. I know you did very well on cut line formats last year. It's a 10-team league. We talked about it a couple episodes with Curtis Jones. Lots of really fun stuff there. You got DCs, which are 15. NFBC 50s, which are 12 teams. Those are drafting holes. The cut line at least has two fab periods. And it kind of coincides, like you mentioned here on the outline, with Dusty Wagner's guest piece. How do you approach drafting in those different leagues, the 10-team versus 15 or the 12 versus 15? What's your mindset difference between the two as we kind of hopefully get closer to actually like fab drafts here pretty soon?
Yeah. So Dusty did a piece on FTN, a guest piece for us. It was a great piece on the difference between drafting 12 teamers and drafting 15 teamers. And, you know, the overarching point there, I feel like it really kind of corresponds to what I ended up doing on the cut line there is kind of, you know, taking shots. You know, it's like, it's not a perfect way to explain it, but I've explained it this way a couple of times is like, you know, think of trying to win a tournament on DraftKings. You know, you're not just trying to parse through and find out the best point per dollar at every position and then plug them in and hopefully it happens. You know what I mean? You want to kind of take some shots that way. And so the cut line was a lot of fun. I think I got seventh in the cut line, seventh overall there. And I mean, like with one or two days left, I think I was in second place. I didn't have a chance for first. That guy was just, he had the nuts. It was over, but I was pretty close to second there. And that one for me was the differentiating factor there was everybody spent their fab in midseason on Adolis Garcia. And I kind of saw that, you know, being a DFS guy and paying attention to this stuff, I saw that strikeout rate, you know, just really starting to climb. You know, it was kind of steady there and he was playing really well and really started to climb. I was kind of off him in DFS at that point, you know, kind of no matter what, while he was in that hole. And so everybody spent their fab for the second half on him. And I went for Luis Garcia. I needed an extra arm there. And then a bunch of other like little pieces, Tyler Naquin, stuff like that, that pieces that I got kind of cheap that kind of paid off. I think just, you know, people spent too much on Adolis Garcia. So that was a big help. And then another kind of point that I like to make about that was my pitching. I had, you know, a couple closers. I had like two closers. Actually, the guy that won the cut line didn't have a single closer at all. You don't really need a closer in one of those leagues. You know, it's just points based or whatever. So however they go about it is how they go about it. And, you know, for me, I really hit like I felt like I was like aiming for GPP upside, you know, with my draft. Robbie Ray, which nobody could have predicted, you know, a Cy Young. Like I certainly wasn't, but I was, you know, certainly I was taking a look at the list and like where he was going, and with strikeouts being weighed pretty heavily in cut line, kind of like they are in DFS. It was like, you know, Robbie Ray, even in those matchups where, you know, or the previous season when he was struggling with his command, like his price would still be up there because he still had that upside to go out there and strike out 12 guys, even with bad command. So, I mean, I was kind of looking at that. So I had Robbie Ray, I had Dylan Cease. It was a whole lot of just kind of looking for the upside, you know.
I love it. And it's kind of what you mentioned with Dusty's article 12 versus 15. Like, I don't want to give everything away because people should go check it out. But the GPP mindset of a 12 versus a 15, and like the way I've compared it, and I had Dusty on the show like 3 or 4 weeks ago. The idea of the GPP that, like, we talk about 12s is that replacement value is so much easier to find per se on the waiver wire. So you can take those shots on your Adalberto Mondesi's, on your younger players, on your potentially injured guys that might stay healthy, but like in a 15 where replacement value stinks, you need that kind of more stability of the situation. So it's a really good article to open the eyes. And he compares a couple like situations where, you know, this kind of risk I'd take in 12 with this player, but not with this guy in a 15, and so on and so forth. And it's a really good deal with all the content that's out there. When do you plan on doing some fab leagues? Because I'm waiting until this stinking lockout's over.
Yeah. I mean, it's something to consider, and I haven't started yet. And mostly I haven't started yet just because my kind of traditional timeline, at this point, I'm still drafting DCs. At this point last year, I was still drafting DCs. The previous season when, of course, you know, COVID hit and that happened, you know, this point in the season, still drafting DCs. I'm kind of still there, but we are about, you know, like when Razzball starts up, like that's kind of the time when the juices, yeah. You know, you got to do a little bit of research for Razzball. So that kind of gets things moving. And I mean, I'm a couple weeks away from the point where I normally would be. Am I going to hold out and wait on the lockout? Gosh, I really haven't thought about it yet. I'm, you know, every time I start to feel a little bit pessimistic, I see a little tweet that, you know, oh, they're meeting tomorrow, you know, and it's just in my nature to be a little bit optimistic about that kind of thing. And, you know, I don't see the, you know, this lockout happening a whole lot longer. You know, in 1994, things were different, right? Let's think about 1994. You know, the guys that owned the baseball teams are the guys that owned the Chicago Tribune. You know, the guys that owned, you know, the big newspapers. And so they were able to control the narrative a lot more back then. And now, you know, I know that the fantasy baseball Twitter is like a, kind of a small segment of baseball fans, but it's kind of spreading out. And, you know, the narrative is not that, you know, the players are the greedy ones. The narrative's been flipped with social media, with the internet this time. And I think there's more pressure on the owners than people are admitting. I think there's a lot of pressure on the owners to get this thing happen. I mean, you know, look what everybody's tweeting about right now. You know, cancel MLB until there's a deal. I mean, when you start hitting them in the pocketbooks, that's when those guys kind of decide to listen, you know. So, like I said, maybe that's just me because I'm kind of an optimistic guy, but I think something happens pretty soon. If we have to give back 2 weeks of spring training, very well could be. I mean, we're already at that point, basically.
Pretty much, the buses
haven't left yet, right? So, I mean, we're at that point, but, you know, how much of the season do we lose? I don't think too much. I think something happens.
Yeah. I'm still with it. Today was the first kind of pessimistic thoughts I had with just how bad the meeting went. Like, it felt like a step backwards. But then quickly afterwards, like, I read a few tweets and I started thinking positively again about, you know, certain situations of how it could fire off quickly and things could change. And it's like they both want it, but they just – the part I get frustrated with is they just don't meet often enough. It just annoys me how they just take so much time in between meetings. But I know they're talking behind the scenes. I'm not clueless to this. But it just the appeal is not great. But I don't want to make this a lockout podcast. But I'm with you. My goal was like March 1st to start doing them. I'm wavering. Stuck. I won an OC ticket last year in a qualifier. Like, I'm just kind of holding these things. Just kind of like I'll do the TGFBI that's coming up. Raz Slam. We got some things like that, like you said. But before I go like full bore, I'm just like, let's just wait a little bit longer. Cause I'd like to see a couple signings or something. Like, give me an idea. Like, we're going to talk about some things with the Dodgers that could flip on its head with so many things. And if I'm going to put that kind of a scratch behind it, I'd like a little more clarity. If I can get some, that would be great. What are you doing though? Because with this lockout, you know, usually the fun part about starting drafts and say, you know, November, and then as they kind of go through, you see the changing of ADP because news comes out, guys are at spring training. We see like some dude like Mikel Franco goes and hits three jacks in a game. Now he's like the most popular guy in the world. All these kind of things that go on. But right now we're literally watching Ronald Acuna videos, and that's like all we've got. So it's almost like it's the same like player pull over and over again. How are you approaching these drafts with the lack of change, I guess, in the news? Are you trying to just in your head diversify, or how are you going about that?
I mean, I am just looking for the scenarios where there's artificial hesitation by the drafters. You know, there's really, you know, it feels like these guys that aren't signed, they get pushed down a little bit, and you know, that's not significant, but you know, if Carlos Correa is going 105 overall instead of like 95 overall. Like, I'm sorry, there's a gap there. There's an edge. There's money to be made there. So I'm trying to take advantage of that. You know, Carlos Correa, I don't care where he signs. He's going to hit in the top of the lineup. You know, like maybe the ballpark will be a little bit better. Maybe it'll be a little bit worse. It shouldn't matter too much. And so for the most part, I mean, I'm looking for a little bit of an edge and just a little bit of that uncertainty. I'm trying to leverage that, trying to use it in my favor a little bit there. That's not something that's easy to do if you're only drafting one or two of these. You know, if you're only drafting three of them, you know, you've only got so many opportunities there. You know, if you got 10, 12, you know, if you got 15 of those, then you can kind of take a chance on a couple of them in different couple of ways there. So mostly that there is, we are kind of getting to the point now where the lockout's extending far enough and where this is getting to a point where guys like, you know, I've been afraid of Acuna. I think a lot of people are afraid of Acuna, but as this kind of drags on, you know, if the season starts May 1st instead of April 1st or whatever day, I mean, I think that's good for Acuna, a little bit extra time, you know, for those wheels. And yeah, I think it changes stuff like that. And now that we're talking about it, I've got a little bit of an article idea, you know, going in my head, like those guys that are going to be due back for the second half of the season due to Tommy John surgery, all of a sudden, maybe they start to matter now. If they're only, I mean, you got to look at it in proportions. If a guy comes back, you know, for August and September for a 6-month season, that's 33% of the season. If the
big difference,
the season gets pushed back and they're more or less only missing half of the season. And that's a thing where, you know, you can kind of play that situation out in your head and see who makes a little bit more sense for the front half of the season and kind of pair guys up like that. I think there's an article subject in there somewhere, but yeah. So those are the things I'm kind of looking for at this point.
Yeah, I'm with you. And guys, just innings pitched, the concerns in general, like not just the injury guys. Like, we'll talk Julio Urias later, and I'm one of the few that's hesitant on him. There's who are so locked in on him, and I'm willing to be wrong type situation, but the increase in innings just scares me still. But that changes for me, at least in my mind, a lot more, and that can happen for a lot of other potential players to draft as well. I know my most recent in FBC 50, because I'm trying to – my goal is to do more OCs this year, 12-team leagues. So I'm trying to switch back to the 50s mindset. I did a lot of DCs early, but I just want to get that 12-team mindset going again, even though it's a draft and hold. But this last one I've been doing with Yancey, who's in the YouTube chat right now, and he's been sniping me left and right like a really
good person. How do I get that? How can I see his
It should be on the right side. I'm not sure how it looks on yours, but it should be like under comments or chat.
Oh, yeah, private chat and comments. Oh,
there you go. Yeah. But
he played PGA DFS today.
Yeah, he's in
more
he's
braver in. Braver than I am. I tried a couple years ago, man. I don't know.
I do it all the time. I love it. But and that's Will Clark, not Dallas Clark Yancey. It's Will Clark. Be nice. But I've started taking different guys in that draft that I haven't taken yet, trying to see where my builds go, like guys that are falling in ADP and trying to move things around just to kind of see where things fit. And that'll lead me to this next question here. I've been drafting a ton in like the world 7th, 8th, maybe 9th overall in that part of the draft, which not a fan of, to be honest. But where are you finding kind of your happy place in drafts? Like, I prefer the front. It sounds easy. Most years I don't care, but this year I really want to get one of those guys early because things get real murky late, especially in stolen bases in the back half of the draft, to me at least. So how are you approaching things?
Yeah, absolutely. I want top four. Four. Most seasons, I want like a couple of these, a couple of those, and a couple of those too. This year, I just, my KDS, it's weird. My KDS this whole time has just stayed 1 through 15.
Same with me. I haven't touched it once.
In years past, I was like, you know, playing out scenarios and like looking at ADP and like kind of like, okay, I would actually rather 8th instead of 10th or whatever. Man, it doesn't matter. I want to pick early, you know, especially like those top four. You know, getting stolen bases. I mean, it's one of those things. There's a little bit of stolen bases late in the draft there, but you're going to pay the price in other categories. And the price is big, you know, like drafting 30 stolen bases in the first round means, you know, 25 home runs come with it. Drafting 30 stolen bases in, you know, whatever, the 7th round, you know, whatever, Miles Straw, you know, in the 10th round, or whatever, you know, that means 4 home runs. That's a big hit, you know, like, comparing that to closers, you know, an early closer means 85 strikeouts, or your ratios are where they are for, you know, for 80 innings or whatever it is. The difference between getting, you know, 25 saves late, you know, in the 150s or whatever, the difference there is, you know, I don't know, 15 strikeouts, you know, like 60 strikeouts instead of 80, like stolen bases, man. I'm willing to push those up way more than I'm willing to push up saves, you know, personally. So
100%, because like we've talked about earlier, you can take shots on like potential saves guys later. You can't get potential stolen base guys very often, because that's just dead weight that might not even see your roster. At least some of those late back end guys, when you have a bunch of injuries, you can put them in there and hope they sneak out a win or some strikeouts some weeks or something. They'll give you a little something where those offensive guys might not even find the lineup. So it's a tricky deal. So I'm with you there. Any final takeaways from this early draft season before we talk some Dodgers?
I am ready to talk about the Dodgers. I am ready. I have a point. You know, this is, I got my FTN hat on, so everybody can see it. You know, I'm not wearing a Dodgers hat. I think every other podcast I've ever done, or especially a video, I always wear a Dodgers hat. And and today we're going to talk about Dodgers, and I'm going to wear an FTN hat.
Company man. I love it. Let's talk Dodgers. This is a fun one, because I was telling Brock before the show, is there's, for such a really, really good team, perennially, they always have some interesting fantasy questions. There's always stuff around them, because either platoons, injuries, this, that, and the other. So it makes them very challenging to really dig in on as a whole. So let's start with one of the biggest conundrums right now, and that is one Cody Bellinger, who, you know, isn't too far removed from MVP-type seasons. And now he's going around close to 100 right now in the month of February in drafts. We know we've seen him do two different swing changes in recent years. We've had the shoulder injury, like a back injury. There's been all kinds of injuries with Cody Bellinger, but now he's going on pick 100. I know there's some big dogs, Vlad and Jeff Erickson and Scott Genstead, like some really savvy NFBC players that are in on him. Could it be the price? Could it be both? Who knows? Where do you stand on him? Because I know you've dug in on this. We've kind of DM'd about different players with your research and everything. So I know you've done more than just, you know, your Dodgerness to this. You've looked at Cody Bellinger. So what's your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I like Bellinger too. I'm in on him on that price. You know, that price is nice. You know, we try to get these guys, you know, try to draft from a lot of these spots where guys are kind of on the way up, you know, and, you know, it's kind of tough to have upside when you're a second round pick. You know, there's not a lot of room, right? So anytime a guy that it's been proven to us that he can be a first round pick type of guy, anytime those guys are, you know, 100 picks into the draft, there's definitely room for a lot of upside there. So when you weigh what that upside is, and then, you know, the other side, the risk, you know, for me, you know, Bellinger, last year, you know, I drafted him a couple times last year, and, you know, in hindsight, that was a mistake, you know, coming right off that surgery, shoulder, you know, anything like that, man, anything part of that, that powertrain, I really want to stay away from for as far as power hitters go, you know, kind of moving forward. And I've seen this example enough times. I should have known last year, you know, these guys, these labrum surgeries, you know, a lot of guys, you know, Matt Kemp, when he ran into that wall in Colorado years ago, you know, the power took, you know, 2 years to come back. And even then he was never the same player ever again, really. I mean, it came back and he was a good player for, you know, a couple of years there or whatever, but, you know, Troy Gloss is like one of the only examples where a guy had that labrum surgery and the power really came all the way back. I mean, I think he still hit over 40 home runs after his labrum surgery, but it took 2 years. This is, you know, Michael Brantley is like a completely different example that kind of tells us the same thing. You know, Michael Brantley hit like, I mean, he had almost no power there for those, you know, 2 years or whatever after the labrum surgery. And I don't think Bellinger's labrum surgery was as extreme as some of those other guys there. But, you know, the point is that, you know, that first year back, there's different degrees of health. It isn't just kind of, you're either on the DL or you're 100%. There's something in between there. And so I think what we saw with Bellinger is the shoulder was healthy to the point where he was free to, you know, obviously be on the field and do everything with it. It doesn't mean that it worked at 100%. And so we're just another year removed from that. I think if he ends up, you know, somewhere in between what he did in the second half of last season and that MVP season. If you kind of take those two levels and put us somewhere in the middle, I think that's a couple notches above the price of a number 100 pick. So I'm kind of there on Bellinger. I expect at the very least, I expect him to return solid value, but there's definitely plenty of upside in there.
Yeah, it's interesting. You look like the Bad X. They have him for a 242 average. And, you know, but besides 2020 and 2021, where the average is down, he's usually 260 or better. So that could be up for debate. But, you know, 26 homers, 9 stolen bases. So definitely a market improvement on the last few years. So almost more like his 2018 type season is what they kind of got going. So similar to what you said, kind of in between the MVP year and that year, which is interesting. Like, that's where I'm kind of close to liking him. Do you think that the swing changes were because of the injuries? Because that's my train of thought, where some people thought he was just trying to tweak things. I think he was trying to, like, we talk about Tatis all the time because he's got the shoulder issues and stuff and he keeps playing through it, but he's adjusted his swing every time, make sure he tries to limit the ferocity basically to it. Do you think Bellinger was doing some kind of swing tweaks to avoid further injury potentially?
I mean, that's a really good question. I hadn't really considered it, but my initial reaction is that if anything, Tatis is, you know, I don't think Bellinger is the same level athlete as Tatis, but it's probably kind of close because, you know, Bellinger is, I mean, up there in sprint speed, he's still a big guy, but he runs like hell. Obviously plenty of power and stuff like that. He's not exactly Tatis, but he is kind of up there, and Tatis can change his swing and, like, what did he do? The next day he hit a ball like 460 feet in the second deck out there in Petco. You know, these guys that are, you know, like if, you know, Eric Thames is like messing with his swing, he doesn't have a lot of margin for error, you know. But, you know, I would expect, regardless of why Bellinger was changing that swing, you know, and another element to that too is I don't think he's changing the swing because of the injury. Because it's not like the swing caused the injury, like, you know, dicking around with his buddy caused the injury. So, one way or another, though, I expect a premium athlete like Bellinger to be able to make it work, just the way that Tatis was able to come back and make it work in the second half of last year.
It's definitely worth a good bounce back, like you said, because even if he doesn't get back to MVP form, he's pick 100 now, which becomes a lot more sustainable. And like you mentioned with the labrum injuries, we've seen it take at least one, like you said, sometimes 2 years for so many guys. So this could be like you're buying in before the breakout happens, and next year he's back to like a second round pick. So that's the whole idea, especially 12 teams. It makes more, like just what we talked about earlier, the 12 versus maybe the 15 if you're worried, whatever. But 12 makes sense.
Buy the dip.
Yep, exactly. Buy the dip. Now, you know, the question everybody says going right next to him is Christian Yelich. You prefer Bellinger over Yelich?
It's way with me. I was reading Yancey leaves his KDS to Blind Chance and let the universe have its way with me. That's been me this year. That's what I did this year with my KDS. And you know what I did? The first three drafts that I did this year was all from the 8 spot every time. What are the odds on that? Sorry. Yep.
Definitely. Another guy on the Dodgers, though, and we were DMing about him a few weeks back. So we were both writing DC articles and everything. And similar to Bellinger, he's got a shoulder issue. And we were all over Edwin Rios last year because we're like, okay, or the DH year at least, you know, the power's there. He's going to play this and that. Well, he missed most of last year due to his injury, had surgery. Should be ready to go come opening day. But again, it's that shoulder concern. And this was the guy we wanted for his power. Some guys are still kind of in on him. I've heard some shows that still like him. But I'm a lot more skeptical after talking to you. He's going to almost pick 500 in DCs. What's your thoughts on Edwin Rios?
Yeah, he's kind of, you know, this is his first year back from that shoulder surgery. This is the thought that I wish I had last year with Bellinger. You know, I made that mistake last year. I'm not going to make it this year. It's too bad because otherwise, I think this is a perfect scenario for Rios, you know, with the DH coming to the National League. You know, if there was not a I wish there was not a shoulder injury last year, but he also somehow didn't really play a lot last year because then he'd be a perfect sneaky pick right now. But with that injury, you know, I had surgery a couple years ago and, you know, this is what the doctor told me. And it seems to kind of, you know, it might be a little confirmation bias, but it really seems to go along with a lot of these surgeries that we see from these big leaguers. You know, the doctor says it takes the body a full year to fully recover, you know, an entire year, whatever reason that is, it takes a whole year. You know, maybe 4 months from now, you don't have, you know, a walking boot or whatever it is, you know, you're able to go about your life or whatever, but it, things, you know, continue to improve, you know, for as long as a year, if not more. And so for that, I just, you know, for what it's worth, pick 500. It's not a lot of cost, you know, yep. It's a pretty cheap price. But for me, there's just, I'm going to find some other darts to throw.
So like when you get to that point in the draft, if you're just looking for power, you know, probably a little before him, you got Bobby Bradley, you got guys like Seth Beer, you got these guys that you know are going to play.
Seth Beer is another one that had shoulder surgery. He's another one that initially I was all excited about, and I saw that and I was like,
yeah, that's a good one. That's a good call there because he screams DH. If anybody screams DH, it's Seth Beer. But the shoulder surgery, because that dude crushes. That's what he's there to do, hit bombs. So keep that stuff in mind. It's more to it than just, you know, he's hurt.
You know, we give Dave a lot of crap on Twitter. I mean, I certainly do. It's a good time and everything like that. We really do. But I want to tip my cap to him a little bit there. He's always been super conservative with injuries, and I'm never going to be that conservative with injuries. Yeah. But watching him kind of go along and tweet about his process here and there, as far as that goes, it's kind of made me realize that I didn't take that into consideration nearly as much as I probably should have in the past.
I think most, I think more casual to early on in their career players definitely don't. That's 100%. But the more we get into it, the more I'm with you. It's definitely something that needs to be paid way more attention to, especially since we have the information that we used to not have. Like, pay attention to this kind of stuff. So I'm with you there as well. Another Dodger that's quite the conundrum is Chris Taylor, coming off a monster season, played 148 games, second most of his career, 20 homers, stole 13 bags. The walk rate was over 10%, you know, hit 254, just did it all for the Dodgers, you know, super utility guy, but found a regular playing time out there due to injuries and whatnot. Well, this year, you know, he's going on to pick 130. And he's got a ton of flexibility, which is great. They just re-signed him, so like they want him to play. There's, you know, Seager's out of town. There's going to be moving pieces. Are you in on Chris Taylor at this type of ADP? Are you hesitant on him? Because there's a lot to like, but there's also like part of me that goes, is this really doable from a guy that, you know, he's done it when he's been able to play, but being able to play has been the question.
Yeah, in my past, in my experience, guys that strike out 27-28% of the time tend not to age well. Taylor, for me, you know, he's going to be like 32 this year. 32, something like that, 31 and a half, 32. I mean, that's kind of the age where things, at least if they haven't already started to go downhill, it probably will soon. And, you know, guys that don't strike out a lot, you know, the Dodgers went out of their way to extend Mookie Betts. I think Mookie Betts is one of those kinds of players that really ages well. And, you know, I already thought that. And then when a pretty sharp franchise like the Dodgers went out of their way to give that, you know, 10-12 year contract to one of those guys, that kind of tipped my hand or tipped their hand to me that, like, I think that was something that they thought was really important. And, you know, Chris Taylor is not Mookie Betts. I mean, that obviously or whatever, but I'm kind of at this point, I'm assuming he's pretty well topped out. I don't think there's any room for improvement from, you know, what he did last year. You know, last year was, you know, something else. I am interested in drafting Chris Taylor in DCs just because being able to move around both middle infield spots, being able to move to the outfield, there's pretty big value in that in DCs, just because you're locked in with your roster for the rest of the year. And, you know, being able to take a legitimate, you know, a guy that's going to get 500 plate appearances and has some actual tools, being able to move him around three different spots there, it's worth a lot. You know, draft champions, sure. But when we start moving on to these OCs and stuff like that with Fab, when if your shortstop goes down, you can get somebody off the wire or whatever, you know, like you were mentioning earlier, the replacement level is definitely different. And so in those kinds of leagues, I think 130, I mean, I'm kind of apprehensive at 130 in a DC, and that's with adding in the value of the, you know, being a Swiss Army knife type of guy on your team. But yeah, I think when we get to OCs, I'm not going there.
Yeah, I'm very similar to you. Like, I have a couple shares of them in these draft and hold formats, 100% for the flexibility. That's what it is, because it's so frustrating when your team's doing so well and then you just have so many injuries and you can't even, and then you start falling in the standings so fast. Like, some people overdo the flexibility needs, but it's important in the draft and holds. There's no questioning that. Now, like you said, the OCs, different animal. I probably can't pay 130 at that point. That's a different animal, but we'll see. He's darn good. It's just I find it hard to believe that that continues on. Before we continue on with the next player, Yancey has a funny comment. Dave was right is something I never thought anybody would say.
That credit was Yancey.
Yeah, credit not me. Too. Dave McDonald, I did not say that. That was Yancey, by the way. Just throwing that out there. Next on the docket, though, you kind of mentioned him in the last segment there, Mookie Betts. This is a very fun one because – you know, he was banged up a lot last year. Well documented, only 122 games. He's been a perennial, usually a good 145 to 150 plus each and every year, barring the random 2018. Still had 23 homers, still sold 10 bags. You know, going to be at the top of that order, which is a great order to be atop of. He's going at an ADP around 15, 16 right now, which is lower than usual for Mookie Betts. So, you know, there's guys like Kyle Tucker going before him. Lou Bob has jumped over him now. There's an interesting realm there. Are you in or out on a guy like Mookie Betts this year?
Yeah, I'm down with Mookie. I really am. I think we're getting a little bit of a discount for, you know, a hip injury from last year. I mean, it makes complete sense, right? Hip injury. He was a little bit slowed, so he ran a little bit less. You know, and you run a little bit less, the batting average of balls in play is going to come down a little bit. It's, you know, a domino effect to a certain degree there. So I'd be surprised if he isn't completely healthy and back on the field this year and ready to go. And if he is, I mean, he's not old. I don't really have any reason to believe that, you know, 2021 is going to carry over into 2022. So I'm fine with him at that price. I think it's appropriate. I think he should be going behind Kyle Tucker. Bryce Harper, I don't really know. I think I know Harper stole 15 last year, right?
Give or take, like 14 or 15, something like that, yeah.
I think Mookie is still a way better bet to steal 20 bags next year than Bryce Harper is. You know, but I can see, you know, there's a little bit more certainty with it feels like with Harper there. So I can see where those guys, you know, it's kind of tough. You know, we're parsing through pick 13, pick 17. You know, a $23 player or $24.20 player. Yeah. It's pretty close. It's fine where he's going. I'm definitely, you know, if he's there at like 15, if I get the wheel and he's there, I'm down to take Mookie there. I'm fine with it. I think he's a pretty safe bet to return value on that pick. So I like Mookie. Yeah. I really want to tell a story about Mookie when Mookie was still in Boston. And Joe Kelly, you know, Joe Kelly pitched for Boston. Mm-hmm. And then after that World Series, he came over to the Dodgers. And in spring training, they were all kind of around. And Joe Kelly was in the clubhouse in spring training with Dave Roberts. Like, the whole team was around. And Joe Kelly's son was in there. And, you know, so Dave Roberts was asking him questions. And he's kind of holding court, right? Everybody's, you know, paying attention and watching. And he asked Joe Kelly's son who his favorite team was. And his response was, Mookie Betts. And then the next year, Mookie Betts shows up and he's on the Dodgers there.
Collusion.
For that story, collusion. I love that story.
There we go. That's a good story. Mookie's, I've told so many people, I probably told you and others, that it really stinks. Like, the Giants Dodgers rivalry is great. It's hard for me to hate a lot of the Dodgers now. Like, you have Betts, you have Bueller, like, even Kershaw, like, one of the best pitchers ever. It's not like the old days where it's like you could legit, there was a rivalry. Like, I didn't like this guy and stuff. I still don't like the Dodgers. I want the Giants to win, but it's like, I don't mind these guys. Like, it's hard not to like Mookie Betts. It's really hard not to like the guy. So it makes it interesting for sure. With Mookie, it's fun, though, because, like you mentioned, if he comes back healthy, we're talking a guy that 2020 upside, hits for a good average, and near the top of that order with him and Trey, like, you got 100-run upside there, which, like, it's one of the categories we don't talk about a lot. I think we kind of take runs for granted. But, like, we've seen Betts in, like, years with the Red Sox get, like, what, 120 or something?
130. He had 140 one year.
Yeah, and that just helps you.
He won the World Series.
That just helps you so, so much. Like, it's so, like, not talked about because we focus on power and speed and everything. But runs scored that he can give you atop that order is tremendous. So it's interesting because you mentioned Kyle Tucker, like Robert, Harper. it's an interesting realm there with Betts. Like in first pitch Arizona, we did a DC and I had the seventh pick and I took Betts ahead of all those guys because right after the season I was all in and it faced a lot of ridicule because I passed on, you know, those young guys. And I've taken Tucker and Robert since then at different spots in the draft. But like Betts is Betts, man. Like it's just one of those deals that if he's healthy, he's still one of the best players in baseball. He's not that old, like you said. So
we'll see. Mookie Betts scored 135 runs for the world champion 2019 Boston Red Sox season previous to that, 2018, 129 runs. You know, and he did that, you know, 390 on base percentage in 2019. I mean, he's projected at a 380 on base percentage. I mean, he's right there with the on base, and you know that 2019 Boston team had a good offense, but I mean, it's not like this Dodgers offense is bad. They have a top three, top five offense as well. You know, getting back up there, 120 runs is well within the range of outcomes, I think. And you know, you get over 200 counting stats, you know, from the 17 spot. I mean, that's a good way to do it.
Most definitely. Let's go to Gavin Lux, big time prospect. Everybody's been waiting for him to break out. Guys like James Anderson and very smart prospect guys have loved Lux for a long time. He's got 7 homers, 4 stolen bases last year in 102 games. So he kind of got his best run so far. I guess the results probably less than desired, but still we'll see. He should have free reign. Seager's out of town. They're going to have a spot for him basing as long as things don't go wrong. And you're getting them at an ADP of around 228 right now with second base shortstop eligibility. Are you in on Gavin Lux? Because I've heard a lot of mixed reviews on him.
Yeah, I think this is the year. You know, last year I was out, and what I'm like scrambling to quickly pull up for us, and it's not in my recent CSV list, so I'm probably not going to get to it. I wonder what his ADP was last year. So I feel like his ADP last year was he like inside 200 last year?
He might have been. People were all in on him. That's for sure.
He was higher last year than he was this year. And it's like, it's crazy. This is the year to get him, you know, if you believe in the talent. And, you know, so that's kind of, you know, my own talent evaluation. Like I try not to rely on that because I'm not a scout. I'm a fantasy baseball player. And so what I do rely on is like other people. And, you know, the Dodgers are confident in him. I think they're going to give him that job. And I mean, he's a little bit of a Swiss Army tool in his own right. He can play second base. And, you know, I know it didn't go great putting him in center field for that small period of time that they did last year. But I have a feeling in the offseason he's working on it a little bit more. And so that'll kind of be there in his back pocket. I think he's a big benefactor of the DH. You know, I think Lux is going to be a guy that they're going to want in there. You know, he's young. He's, what, 26, 27. They're going to want him out there every day. You know, I know that it's going to be, you know, A.J. Pollock's going to be out there DHing a lot. Justin Turner's going to get a decent amount of shots in the DH spot there. You know, I looked back at 2020 and looked at where, you know, who was the DH for the Dodgers most of the time. And that was kind of the underlying point was, you know, Pollock, I think, was the DH most often. But it was like basically he had like 12 starts as a DH and like Justin Turner and Max Muncy had like 10 or 11 or something like that. That they just kind of basically evenly spread it between those guys. And, you know, and I think it had a big impact on Pollock. You know, he was kind of healthy for all of the 2020 season, played 55 out of the 60 games. So I think he's a guy that really benefits from that. And, you know, from those guys benefiting from a DH, I think it's a kind of a trickle down kind of an effect there. And I think it really kind of, you know, guarantees everyday playing time for Gavin Lux. And, you know, Gavin Lux, it's not like he's just some guy that like Dodger fans really like or anything like that. He was literally the number one prospect in all of baseball just like 2 years ago. Yep. You know, the amount of those guys that, you know, really don't ever come through, like even, you know, I always think like Colby Rasmus, like, man, the prospect world was lit on fire by Colby Rasmus. And he was never like one of the best players in the game, but he was still a pretty decent player. He's still pretty good.
Very serviceable. Yeah.
Played some defense, hit some home runs or whatever. So, you know, those guys completely flaming out, you know, especially over the last like 10 years when the scouting and the analytics, everything's so good. For all of that to completely miss on a guy feels like it would just be an unheard of scenario. And if you put that together with every day at bats in the Dodgers lineup, you know, I kind of like Lux there. And, you know, and I like AJ Pollock a lot. I think, you know, AJ Pollock's pretty undervalued. I just did a piece for FTN. Oh my God, it feels like weeks ago. It was like 2 days ago. Man, I've been working on so much lately. AJ Pollock, I was kind of comparing him to Dylan Carlson. I really want to point out that this is not an indictment of Carlson. I think Carlson's a really good player and stuff like that, but kind of taking a look at it, and it's like we're kind of hoping, you know, Carlson could be what Pollock, you know, just kind of does year in and year out, even with his limited amount of plate appearances that he usually gets. But, you know, I think the DH, I think it helps keep Pollock healthy. And if maybe he can play 130 games this year, I think Pollock's going to be a steal where he's been drafted. So, yeah, Gavin Lux and AJ Pollock, a couple guys that that I'm interested in.
I love the Pollock call. I've been in on him too. And I like one thing you mentioned there with the ADP debates, like our comparisons that a lot of us do. A lot of the time it's not an indictment on the guy against him. It's just to show you that there's a value or something elsewhere type deal. Yeah. It's nothing.
2 rounds later for Pollock.
Yeah, and that's the biggest point of finding those things, is finding those pockets of value. Let's talk about a couple pitchers here for the Dodgers real quick. Julio Urias, kind of hinted at him earlier. Massive boost in innings last year, tons of wins, super high ADP now. Are you in on Julio Urias with that massive increase in work? I am terrified. Even Max Scherzer came out and said, the veterans I wouldn't worry about, it's the young players that took the inning spikes last year that I'd be concerned with. Max Scherzer said that.
Yeah. Yeah. If anybody would know, it's.
Yeah. When that quote came out
on Twitter,
yeah.
Probably Max Scherzer, I'd probably go with that. I kind of haven't found myself faced with that scenario yet. Just because if it's the first like 3 rounds, you know, I want 20 homers and 20 steals, or at least a shot at it. You know, if Luis Robert can stay healthy, you know, like something like that. I just haven't been there. I am going to – this could end up being like a grave mistake. Don't get me wrong. But I'm probably going to end up with like a vast majority of my drafts. Like my SP1 in a lot of these is going to be like Jose Berrios. I mean, Joe Musgrove. Like if I can skip over, you know, drafting like an ace, like Urias, Bueller, whoever, if I can skip over those guys for like, you know, 25 homers and 20 steals from Ozzie Albies. And then like later on, instead of like, you know, like you take Berrios, but like I'll take Berrios and Musgrove. Like I'll have, instead of having like paying for an ace, I'm going to have like, you know, two like top tier number two starters or something like that. I have a whole lot of drafts like that so far, and I don't want to get off that build. I like that build so much. So I really haven't been faced with that. So Urias, like you said, it is a big step up in innings. But you know, he's kind of at that age now. I mean, true. We've been talking about him for 10 years, it seems like. and that might not be hyperbolic. It really has been 10 years, even though he's still only going to be 26 years old. I kind of like, he has that build that he could go out there and be a workhorse. He could be one of those guys. Bueller would kind of scare me a little bit, except for, you know, Bueller's, you know, he's thrown 200 innings before. Oh man, that is a tough call. I mean, I'm just glad I'm not like drafting him in the third round. I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. I don't have shares of either one. I'm a big Bueller fan, I'm just kind of worried on both of them. It could be totally wrong. I also like your idea. You're waiting until like round 5 or 6 to start taking pitching. I used to be a pocket aces or an early guy. I have not been that much so far this draft season like you. So I'm kind of in a similar boat. I might go a slightly earlier than you, but we're pretty close in that build. I like getting those bats early. There's some really good bats early. So I'm 100% with you. Rest of the Dodgers rotations, kind of a question mark. You got Gonsolin's, David Price. You got a lot of questions. Definitely a spot we could see approached when the lockout's over. We can pretty much lock into that. Any thoughts on what's going on there for now?
They're not done. The rotation's not done. I mean, we know that you don't spend, you know, $38 million on Mookie Betts. You know, you don't go out there and Justin Turner's like final season as a Dodger or whatever, like a core like this with Andrew Heaney, with whatever's left of Andrew. I think Heaney, they could kind of like teach him some Rich Hill stuff. Maybe Heaney kind of works out or whatever, but they're not going to like rely on him as the SP4. David Price, is only there because it allowed them to trade for Mookie Betts. You know, the fact, you know, when we were in the divisions, or not the division series, the league championship series against the Braves, and Joe Kelly got hurt, you know, and everybody thought like, oh yeah, sure, he's not really hurt, they just really need a starting pitcher. You know, so Joe Kelly's faking having an injury, so he's off the roster so that they can add a starting pitcher. And they did. They added David Price, and they still didn't use him. They still used a bunch of worn-out bullpen arms. I mean, that tells you a lot of what they think about David Price. So I know that Roster Resource has David Price listed as the SP5 for the Dodgers there, but I would be absolutely shocked if the season, if April 1st, whatever that date is, if David Price is still there. So I haven't drafted David Price yet. You know, you mentioned Tony Gonsolin, and I've seen you mention Tony Gonsolin on Twitter before. And, you know, Gonsolin is, he's a tough cookie to crack because the skills are there. The talent's there. He is really good. He has great stuff. But like, is he ever going to be more than like a four inning guy? I mean, he's just
the health,
really
the health hasn't there. Been there. That's the problem.
He just really hasn't done it. And I can see the Dodgers doing something like really interesting. I could see the Dodgers, you know, this is has nothing to really to do with the SP4, SP5 spot in their rotation. I could see the Dodgers bringing back Kershaw and trying to limit his innings by having him and Gonsolin like being like a permanent, like a super piggyback. I think if you just stick with trying to get three innings out of Gonsolin, and maybe if you bring back Kershaw and try to get three and four innings out of Kershaw, you put those guys together, you could end up with what's like borderline ace numbers for seven innings every fifth day. It costs you a roster spot. But I just, the way that they've handled Gonsolin before and just never really pushed him to even see what happens after the fifth inning, kind of tells me that they think that next time through is just not going to happen. So it doesn't really just seem like a volume thing to me. So I could see them getting kind of creative. You know, maybe they trade for one of those guys from Cincinnati, one of those starters from Cincinnati, and then they bring back Kershaw to be a piggyback guy. And if you're at that point, then you've got, you know, Mitchell White's not a bad pitcher, like totally decent option there. You know, maybe you have him Andre Jackson came up and made a cup, you know, had a cup of tea at the big league level last year. You know, maybe you just kind of for the fifth spot in the rotation, figure it out with all those other options there. So I think Gonsolin's probably a part of it. I highly doubt we're getting 150 innings out of him.
That makes sense. What about the bullpen? Kenley Jansen's a free agent. Some people think he's coming back. I've always thought he should finish as a Dodger, but you never know. Money's money. Trinan looks to be a popular talk. You got Gratterall. You got a lot of options. So what are you doing? Because Trinan's getting drafted like he's a closer right now.
Yeah, I haven't drafted him yet. Trinan's obviously one of the more talented bullpen arms in baseball, but I can't really give him that job. You know, it was three years ago when Kenley was a free agent then. And this current ownership and brain trust that is there and installed for the Dodgers right now is the same one that was there a couple years ago. And I totally thought that Dodgers team was going to be like, we don't need to sign a big dollar closer. Like it's a whole lot of money for a little bit of innings. The Dodgers had such good success. There was Brandon Morrow, just kind of these reclamation projects, these guys that they can, you know, bring in there and catch fire for a year. They built like bullpens that way for a couple of years in a row. And I thought for sure, there's no way that they're going to spend $20 million on a proven closer. And you know what they did? They did just that. They brought back Kenley. They gave him the money. They gave him the, I think, 4 years, $64 million, whatever it ended up being. And so that alone kind of proved to me that, you know, they like to build out that bullpen with some reclamation projects, some tweaks that they can, you know, kind of make to some guys to kind of get the most out of them or whatever. I think that they will continue to do that with the bullpen, but I think they are going to recognize the value in, you know, kind of having like just one more known quantity back there. And I'm really starting to think that they bring Kenley back. You know, Kenley had a good year last year, of course, and his year started out bad and kind of can improve most of the year there. He started out, he was throwing real hard, but had no command, was walking a ton of guys and it was kind of rocky there. And he adjusted somewhere in the middle of the season. He adjusted, and it was a little bit rocky. And then by the end of the year, his like 30-day expected weighted on-base average for like the month of September, I think was the best he had ever had in a month in his career. I mean, I swear his numbers were insane in September last year. So I think the Dodgers might see that. They might like those results, whatever kind of tweaks that he made throughout last season, and try to, bet on him being able to continue that maybe a year or two more.
That's kind of been where my head's been the whole time. I had a lot of Kinley Ross.
Either that or Miami. Going back to Don Mattingly.
Makes a lot of sense as well. One of those two landing spots makes a ton of sense. I'm just going to skip the fun part here. You and I are both fading Max Muncy for now. So that's just the way things are going to go. And the reason I'm just going to jump to the conclusions here is we don't know anything, as you said. But what we do want to talk about before some listener questions here is three players that we are both going to have zero exposure, basically fading in drafts this season. And it's kind of a fun thing because people talk about their guys and they're going to do this and that. But there's three guys that we're for sure not going to have any shares of. So, Brock, who is the first player you're having zero shares of?
You're going to hate me, but I'm not kidding. You know, I filled out the outline earlier, and my pick here was Bobby Witt. No way that I'm going to draft Bobby Witt. And I'm not kidding you. If 3 hours later, I'm in a draft where I'm trying to check right now. he's fallen a bunch in this draft. And, you know, I'm trying to say that I'm not going to have any exposure to Bobby Witt, but if he falls this far, I might have to have some. So we'll see what happens in that draft. But yeah, my pick was Bobby Witt. I kind of, started to take a look around, and like, we've seen the bottom end of the range of outcomes with the mega prospects. Last year is an obvious example. Jared Kelnick, can't miss prospect, and the team was trying to throw all kinds of money at him before he even made an appearance at the major league level and everything like that, trying to lock him down and everything. And Kelnick obviously came up and struggled quite a bit. And it doesn't matter how blue chip of a prospect you are. That's definitely a big part of it. There's a definite possibility there. I think he's about the same level of prospect, number one, top prospect type of guy in all of baseball. And the chances that he struggle are legit. There's a decent chance that he does. Now, everybody knows that. I don't want to talk too much about that. The other side of that, like, it goes well for him. Think about if it goes well for Witt, if everything kind of comes together there, like the upside, like maybe not like 99th percentile or whatever, but he has a good season. What does that good season look like? Like, how much better is it than Carlos Correa? We pretty much know what we're going to get with Correa. He's going to hit, 22, 24 home runs, decent amount of batting average. And, the counting stats are going to be there wherever he signs. And unless it's like a mega offense like Houston, most of the other teams that he's going to sign with, he's probably like hitting second, right? His counting stats are probably going to improve for Correa there. If everything goes right for Witt, I know that there's going to be probably another, Correa doesn't steal. There's probably going to be another
steals is the big thing.
Steals in there. But like otherwise, like everything has to go right for him to be a little bit better than Correa. And Correa is available 10 picks later. Witt, I'm excited to see him play. It's going to be fun. Kind of like with Wander last year. Excited to see him play. But I'm not going to invest my draft capital there.
Yeah, I have no Bobby Witt desires either. I'm with you. I hope he's fun. I hope he's fun to watch. I'm with you. My first one, people probably are going to hate this one, but I have zero shares so far, and it's just more price point for me because I expect the regression monster to come and show up, and I still think Cedric Mullins is going to be very good, but I have not taken him. He's falling in drafts now, similar to what you said about Witt, where it's getting a little more enticing. Like, there was a point where he was early second round. Now he's going almost early third round, so he's starting to become more in the conversation, but there's a reason I have zero shares so far. I was not paying an early second round price for Mullins. Yeah, he went 30-30 last year. I think he's more 20-20, maybe 25 steals type guy. The average is going to decline. Runs are going to maybe dry up if Baltimore continues to do Baltimore things. He ran perfect last year. He ran perfect. I'm a guy that doesn't like to pay for last year's great season. That's kind of what you're doing a bit in these drafts. So I know a lot of people are probably like, oh, what are you talking about, blah, 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 blah. I won't be having any Seth Mullins. Where he's going in drafts, I'll be having – maybe if I do take a pitcher early, I'll go there. If I take a closer early, I'll take a closer there. If not, I'm taking, you know, a Manny Machado, or I'm taking something along those lines to help me out in a different spot. So for me, it's no Seth Mullins.
Second round, third round, Cedric Mullins, any of those, none of it counts as buying the dip.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the opposite of buying the dip.
Exactly. So who's your second guy? Because I actually agree with this one as well.
You know, I want to change. I want to change it. I put Camilo Duvall, you know, San Francisco Giants presumptive closer. I wanted to put him. I want to change it to say all closers. I'm fading all closers. I'm just a little frustrated with the closer thing. So Duvall, we saw how electric he was. I mean, he was nasty against the Dodgers there in that final stretch in September. And super talented guy there. But that walk rate, I can't remember who I was talking about when I did, but like last year I was talking about a guy in the preseason. It was Karinchak. It was James Karinchak from the Cleveland Indians. And it was like, basically like guys with like 13% walk rates that thrive and can actually survive at the major league level. The list is like Aroldis Chapman. And then who was the other guy that tons of walks? Kimbrel, oh, I can't remember who it was. You know, the list was like, there's basically like two relievers that were able to, you know, sustain success over a long period of time with a high walk rate. So I think that's a little bit worrisome for Duvall. Obviously, he's like a young fireballer and more than enough time for him to kind of right that ship or whatever. But where he's being drafted, it kind of feels like he's being drafted where like if things go right, this is where he ends up. I think that's a little bit crazy. I don't really want to bet on like best case scenario. I think that's ignoring a lot. And you know what else it's ignoring is the same thing as last year, you know, Jake McGee. I mean, Jake McGee was one of the better relievers in baseball last year. He really was. He had, you know, a couple blown saves there or whatever, kind of lost the job and kind of got it back at different points or whatever last year. Overall, he pitched really well. And you got Rodgers there. There's too many good options. There's too many question marks there for like a number 40 or a 140, 160 pick, you know, in my opinion.
Perfect. I completely agree. And I don't want to be rude, but I just got a text message. My wife's getting called back into work at the hospital. So I got about 5 minutes before we got to wrap up because my daughter just got home. So we're going to go quick through these speed round. My second one, and people will hate this as well, is Wander Franco. I have zero shares of Wander Franco. He doesn't steal bases. Like you, like Correa, you mentioned him. Correa will be better. I'll take my chances with Jorge Polanco, Jazz Chisholm, Dansby Swanson, Willie Adames. Give me all those guys over Wander Franco. So I'll pass on Wander Franco. Who's your number three?
I'm totally with you on Franco there, and my number three feels like a little bit of a cheating a little bit there, but Clayton Kershaw, the downside is he throws zero innings for you. The upside for Kershaw is probably 110 innings, you know, 110. We're hoping for 110, and especially the chances that those 110 innings come in Texas where like, you know, it's a bad bullpen. The offense isn't the same as with the Dodgers there. Obviously it's a better ballpark and stuff like that. I mean, there's just, I initially thought people were going to be scared off on Kershaw and he'd be going even lower than he is. And I thought that I was going to try and get sneaky and get some exposure to him, but where Kershaw's going, it's just not worth the risk, way too much.
I agree. No Kershaw for me as well. My third one's Corey Seager. I know he could be great. He just hasn't proven he can play. Again, I'll take Swanson later, take Willie Adames later. Plus going to that ballpark in Texas, massive pitcher's ballpark. Counting stats probably will suffer in that lineup. Just so many downgrades. He got paid. Awesome for him. Congratulations, Corey. You did your thing. Not the best fantasy situation. That's the best I can say. So no Corey Seager for me as well. Listeners, you left great questions. They were answered earlier. I promise. You asked questions about Lux and other Dodgers. We answered them all. I promise.
That was a good one, Lux. Yeah, it was. Yeah,
I hate to. I'm not trying to be rude, but this is one of those deals. Just life happens. It happened in the middle of the podcast. So, Brock, before we take off, plug what you got going on at FTN, and we're gonna head on out of here.
FTNFantasy.com, and then I won't be a part of it, but FTN Daily is where my work was found for Daily Fantasy last year. This year, I won't be a part of it. I just got too much other things going on there, but check out FTN. I'm sure you all have heard it by now, and Vlad and the whole team over there. And hit me up on Twitter at Brock Ness Monster. I'm pretty easy to find.
Yeah, always Brock available. Is awesome. Brock is awesome. Make sure you hit him up. Great stuff as always. And again, Brock, I appreciate you joining me. We will do this again sometime. Good luck with your future endeavors. I'm happy for you. Awesome stuff, my friends. Always a pleasure chatting with you. But everybody, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 439 with the one, the only Brock Miller, Mr. Brock Ness Monster. Catch you all later.
Better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.